Support for WPR comes from The Alliance, committed to being an objective partner for over 425 employers and their brokers, providing self-funded employers with data to manage their health plans. The-Alliance.org.
Support for WPR comes from Focus on Energy, committed to helping Wisconsinites focus on the planet by making smart energy choices. Energy resources for Earth Day and every day can be found at FocusOnEnergy.com.
And welcome to the Midday for a Thursday with Vicki and Norman. And who else is here?
Oh, we have a nice studio full of wonderful people who are going to join us until quiz question time. One is the soloist with Madison Symphony Orchestra this weekend, violinist Jennifer Frauci. So welcome to you, Jennifer.
Hi, thanks for having us.
Wonderful to have you here. And the conductor, guest conductor of the Madison Symphony this time around is Arild Remarite.
That's right.
Is it? Is that right?
Arild?
It sounds very good.
We're told that it's difficult to pronounce in Norwegian, so we won't try
it's
the
authentic. Case of the floating accent.
I just like your way of saying it much more. I find it much more charming, so let's stick to that.
We feel empowered.
Great to be here.
Perhaps not thank correct, you. But charming. Huh?
And what's
what
in the works?
What is correct?
Well, the program for the weekend is includes the Glazunov Violin Concerto, and some good Norwegian music from Edvard Grieg, the Peer Gynt Suite, and Dvorak Symphony No. 7. Three concerts this weekend, and I know that people will wonder if I don't ask, so I understand that you are related to Jerome Frauci.
That's right. Jerry and John Frauci are my father's cousins, and my father grew up in Madison, as did my aunt and uncle. That's my father's side of the family has all left Madison, but my father's cousin's side of the family is largely here, of course, and I'm looking forward to seeing them this weekend.
You've both been doing quite a bit of traveling over the last X number of years. In fact, Arild, you're something of a conductor at large.
What does that mean?
Well, that you don't have what might be called a home orchestra, that you actually sort of travel around the world filling
yeah,
in a
that's,
lot for
that's
other
right.
conductors.
Which isn't all that uncommon, actually.
But you do fill in quite a bit last minute for conductors who are otherwise disposed?
I wouldn't say I do. I did.
You did.
I did that since we saw each other the last time.
About 4 years ago now.
Which has been a great opportunity for me. I actually jumped in, if I might use that word, substituted for other conductors in 2005 in a total of 8 times in 1 year, and all with A-level orchestras. And you can imagine that is not a thing that you can take easy, and it's very tiring, very demanding in all respects. So I'm very happy to say now that I don't do that anymore.
It's quite a bit to expect someone to learn the literature so quickly.
And the orchestra
and travel there.
In the most extreme cases, I have really had not even a complete night of preparation. It has really been that short notice. And my absolute highlight is half a night preparation for La Scala Milan with a program I never have done before, I never have heard partly, and I didn't have a score to.
You
can imagine, I had the score for the Beethoven, Christ on the Mount of Olives, 10 minutes before the first rehearsal in my hands. But,
wow.
You know, at that point, on that stage of my career, I knew it was no way I can say no. So this was my chance, and I will fail or I will make it, but it's no way I'm going to say no.
Sink or swim, as we say.
Yeah. On the other hand, you probably have a little bit more familiarity with Peer Gynt.
I've done that a couple of times. You probably all know, it was the Grieg Jubileum last year, and the year before it was the Ibsen Jubileum, so there has been plenty of occasions where exactly this music, the Peer Gynt by Grieg, could come up, and I have certainly done it on several occasions, also in the States.
Just one more question about that, and that is, Grieg was somewhat disparaging of that music. Was it just because he was in a bad mood when somebody mentioned Peer Gynt?
That is actually a fascinating story. They met, the two of them, in Italy, in Rome, in the Scandinavian club. Ibsen, finding the young, very shy composer charming, and he was thinking about Grieg then on a later occasion when it came up that they wanted to have some music for this. But it ended with this one cooperation between them. They didn't like each other very much. I think Ibsen probably didn't really feel happy about the impact that Grieg's music had. It was an immediate hit. It had an impact like Johann Strauss' waltz must have had in its time. And, of course, Ibsen's play didn't have that immediate impact. This is a very complicated story, and it certainly needed its time.
And a long play.
Yes, it's a long play, and it needed its time and its generations to be understood, I feel. And also, there are many, actually, letters from Grieg where he also writes about how much he dislikes writing music to this story. And there is, he writes one place, if I can more or less quote this out of memory. He says to a friend, he has found some music for the scene, the Mountain King, which he just hates to listen to. It sounds so like cow turd.
Yeah, that's often quoted, isn't it?
Yes.
It reeks, he said.
Super Norwegianism, he calls it.
A little too smug, he thought. Yeah. On the other hand, also very popular in his own time was Fritz Kreisler.
Yeah.
Well, and we just happen to have a piece that we're going to play by Fritz Kreisler that Jennifer has on her CD called Solo Vision. And this piece being the recitativo and Scherzo Caprice. Jennifer Frauci playing all by herself that Fritz Kreisler piece, recitativo and scherzo caprice on her Solo Vision CD. But this weekend you're playing with Madison Symphony Orchestra, a wonderful romantic melodic concerto by Glazunov. What have you enjoyed? Is this the first time you've performed that? You will perform that?
No, I've done it several times, although not that frequently. We were discussing this last night. It's a piece that is certainly a staple of the violin repertoire, but I think these days doesn't get programmed all too often. I think this is probably the fourth time I've done it. I did it just last month, and it's a wonderful, rich, romantic concerto. What's funny about it is that it was actually written in the 20th century, at the very beginning of the 20th century. I think it's 1904, but at a time when people like Stravinsky, Schoenberg, just starting out, Debussy, Ravel were writing quite a different kind of music, all of them in different languages, but much more of a modern bent. And Glazunov was still very much writing in this ultra-romantic mode. But it's a wonderful concerto, and one thing about it is it's written in a pretty compact form, and there's no pause between the three movements, and it flows seamlessly from one idea to the next. And right in the middle is a cadenza that is sort of the center of the piece, which then leads into an exciting finale, last movement, which is a nice romp for the violin and orchestra.
Did you write the cadenza, or is this something that's
written? No, this was actually written by Glazunov himself. It was written by the composer, which is not always the case, but it's thoroughly integrated into the piece, so it's very much part of the fabric of the composition.
Well, he was a, although largely neglected. I mean, it's rare to find Glazunov on a concert program, I think.
True.
He wrote an awful lot of big, solid stuff, and he was a major teacher of a lot of big composers who came along later, including Shostakovich. But then he wrote a saxophone concerto, which is completely classical. I mean, there's not any breath of jazz in it, but he was still interested in the instrument. Mm-hmm. He was quite an interesting guy.
Mm-hmm. Also fascinating to see, isn't it, that he lives until up in the 30s, in 1936, actually, and a long period of time he doesn't write anything anymore. It seems like he believes in this tradition, he believes in this kind of writing. It's often written about how he's walking out in concert because he feels so annoyed and insulted by this new music making, this new writing. And it ends up like he's just stepping back and say, okay, if nobody wants to listen to me anymore, I just don't write any more music. And it's over.
And he was actually a very close contemporary of the next composer from whom we'll hear, namely Maurice Ravel.
And on this CD, we're going to hear the last couple of movements of the violin concerto by Ravel. Your
violin
pianist?
Sonata.
Violin sonata.
The orchestra didn't show
up. I'm thinking
up.
Concerto. But this is smaller, violin and piano. And you're looking at which CD we have here, but it's one with Stravinsky and Ravel, represented equally here. Your pianist is Marta Aznavourian.
Who's a wonderful pianist who lives in Chicago, actually, and performs there.
So from Ravel, the last two movements of his violin sonata.
With violinist Jennifer Frauci. That movement appropriately was blues.
Ah, yes, incorporating a little jazz, as Maurice Ravel occasionally liked to do.
That's right.
From the violin sonata, Jennifer Frauci, violin, and Marta Aznavourian, piano.
And Ravel is one of those very interesting composers in that certainly classically based, but you never know where he was going. Is this a?
Yeah, he had a lot of different inspirations that informed his, what kind of music he wrote, whether it was Orientalism or the jazz that he was hearing in Paris, and but all those, this is what you were talking about with Glazunov, all these guys who were writing in the early, in the teens, the 20s, were 30s, 1920s, 30s, and speaking of, were influenced by these diverse external sources, and someone like Glazunov was really very much, I think, or maybe more of what we'd call reactionary, and sticking to his romantic principles. But we have this glorious violin concerto as a result, which I'm looking forward to playing.
And your time here in Madison also includes some excursions out to some outlying schools, Verona, Mount Horeb, to connect with those younger musicians. I'm wondering if some interesting things come out in their questions to you or reactions to you play and talk about the music you're going to be doing.
Yes. Yeah. I usually talk about when I talk to young music students about my life and about what it's like, and often the questions they have to do with
practicing, schooling, you know, how do you, what's your advice for how to get to where you are or to, you know, pursue a career in music? And often my advice is very much centered around getting out there and going to summer camps and summer festivals and really connecting with as many other young musicians of your generation as you can, because that's really what forms a base and a network for the rest of your life. And I think that's been very much important in my own career. Or, you know, these friendships I made when I was a teenager in my early 20s, whether it was in music school or competitions or camps. And those are the people that I often work with now as a professional musician.
Again, it never occurred to me till now, I guess, but a conductor has a slight disadvantage. You can't exactly practice all day, can you? I mean, you get in there, you get to rehearse with the orchestra, but it's other than really studying the score, well, what can you do?
No, it's definitely different. That's correct. And that makes it certainly a very delicate thing for a young person, a young conductor, that you don't have the feeling of what an orchestra is in your body, so to speak. The more experience you have, the more you can sit at home and just think about it, and you kind of sense what it will mean to be able to do this music in front of the orchestra. But it's very much reading, and it's very much quiet. There are very many quiet, long quiet moments in a conductor's life. The more quiet it is, the more we we can focus on studying and hearing the music inside, so to speak.
Would you rather have a conductor or a violinist as your upstairs neighbor?
Well, it depends on the conductor. If there are conductors who like to bang through everything they do on the piano. I don't do that. I prefer to just have it inside of myself. And when it's too complicated and I cannot really hear it inside in my brain, that is, then I go to the piano just to check out these chord progressions to be able then, after a while, to imagine them. There are conductors who bang through anything and practice it like if they were going to perform it on the piano. I wouldn't like to have these people as my neighbors. And, well, the more far away musicians are, I think the better.
I can tell you I've had many neighbors who did not appreciate having me there. Did not want to hear
violin,
a violin.
The violin is not the most noisy thing, I guess.
Well, there have been articles in magazines recently about someone who got into trouble practicing a lot, and so they finally, I guess, outfitted them with headphones and so forth. I don't know how that worked, but...
Well, often, you know, I lived in New York City for many years, and there, when musicians I know have had problems with their neighbors, they have to spend tens of thousands of dollars soundproofing their room. Mm-hmm. That's really the only recourse they have in an apartment building.
Well, everybody is going to be actually trying to hear you come Friday and Saturday nights and Sunday afternoon as Ariel Dremmerite conducts the Madison Symphony, and the soloist, also our guest today, Jennifer Frauci, performs the Glazunov Violin Concerto. Also on the program, the Peer Gynt Suite of Grieg. Is it both suites, one suite?
It's a mix
connection,
from both.
Combination. Mm-hmm. And then the Dvorak Seventh Symphony also.
All performed in that great Overture Hall in Madison. Friday night, 7:30, Saturday night at 8, and Sunday afternoon at 2:30. And for tickets, 608-258-4141.
Thanks for being with us.
Thank you.
Thanks.